Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post his alt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at DungeonsMaster.com. And welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Hey everyone, welcome to Recounting Encounters. We are now in Season 15, Murder at Baldur's Gate, and this week we talk about Stage 3, or as we like to refer it over in Blogland, Session 3. This week, Derek and Craig once again played at the table. I was once again absent due to the new school year starting. But anyway, regardless of my personal issues, you guys have a lot to talk about. And this week, I believe there's a lot of statues missing hands, correct?
No, you're 1 week ahead.
Okay, well, I backtrack. You didn't hear anything about the hands. This one here is what? The sumptuary laws and stuff.
Yes. You know, it's because you're thinking of week three and you looked at session three,
yes.
Or stage three, but stage two.
Stage two. Man, I just failed my endurance check, didn't I? Nice. All right, so explain to me what happens this weekend. I know that you guys were talking a little bit earlier about some packed tables and stuff, so it sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was another full house for us. So in last week, we had three DMs, three tables, and they were massively full. And so we begged one of the other players who has been a DM in the past and who is actually a really good DM to please, please, please run a fourth table for us. And after enough begging and, you know, embarrassing ourselves in front of him, he agreed. On the upside, he had already bought a copy of the adventure. So that was one problem we didn't have to worry about. However, we had made arrangements for one of the DMs knew he was not going to be able to play this week. So he and his entire group decided collectively they would not come this week. And next week, they would just smush two sessions together. So we knew that we were going to be down one DM, but we also knew we were going to be down six or seven players. So we figured, you know, shouldn't be a problem. We had also had reason to believe, because some of the other players had indicated that they might also not be here this week, that we were going to just have two normal sized tables. So we didn't bother getting our new DM up and running. And as it turned out, he was running behind anyway. So we weren't even sure if he was going to be there. So when Craig and I started the night, I believe we both had tables of five.
Yep, yeah, we had five apiece.
Five and five. And we had a couple of brand new players. I know I had one at my table, and Craig, I think you had one at your table, right? Like brand
That's
new
right.
to D&D Next.
One guy, yeah, completely. Well, actually, I had two new players. One guy was new to D&D Next. He hadn't played fourth either. Last time he played was 3.5, and then he hadn't played D&D in a while, as from my understanding. So he was coming in again with D&D Next. And then another guy who had played a couple of like two or three sessions of fourth edition, not too long ago. But that's his experience with D&D. So he was pretty new, and D&D Next was completely new to him.
Yeah, so basically you could break him easily from his fourth habits and just introduce
exactly.
Him.
Yeah, he didn't really have any like hard habits or anything like
right.
that.
And I know with my group, I had two of the new players that had joined last week or the week before had actually brought their buddy. So it was three guys that knew each other, two of whom had a couple of weeks experience now, and this new guy had never played before. So, you know, I had some new blood at my table, which was fine. I mean, I always like introducing the hobby to new players. And so that was all well and good. We started up the adventure, and then like about 15 to 20 minutes in, three of the players that were at my group last week showed up. They had like, we actually started late. So given that we started late, plus they were that many minutes late, it was like at least a half an hour behind where we would normally start. And they just sort of strolled in. It was a dad with a couple of young kids. So again, you know, you hate to turn anyone away, especially young kids. So I was like, okay, fine, sit on. So I ended up running a table. I think I ended up with nine by the time all eight or nine by the time it was said and done.
Well, I know when those guys came in, you sent one of your guys to mine to even it a little more, but then people just kept piling in.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. It's word is out that D&D is happening at our store, and you know, that Craig and I are amazing DMs. And
that's why. That's
yeah,
why.
For sure.
Took a while, but you know, 15 seasons later, here we are.
Yeah, it's like when your sports franchise picks up a superstar and all of a sudden they start selling tickets. That's exactly what it feels
exactly
like.
It.
Yeah,
like
the Leafs.
Word is out.
Anyway, what was I going to say? It seems like people are just going out to D&D Encounters just for the social aspect of it, it seems. It seems like you haven't had any kind of slowing down whatsoever. And It seems that this season seems to be working out well. I mean, considering, everybody has to purchase and anybody can purchase it and stay home and play it.
Well, certainly that's been the case at our store. I mean, we have a pretty good store that's supportive of our of the gaming community, and that's also working with us to try and, so we're not, being fleeced on anything. We don't feel like that they're fighting with us on it. They're trying to make it work with us, basically.
Cool.
So, I mean, I can't speak for any other stores, but I'm sure there's probably some sour stories out there.
But I think, Mark, to your point, I don't think any of the players have gone out, bought the adventure, and then come in and sort of spoiled it by going, "Mwahaha, I know what's really happening," and then,
Yeah.
applying their personal knowledge to their character.
Yeah.
I know for a fact a couple of the players have purchased it, and they're the more experienced players. Like I said, one of the guys, we actually tapped him to be the DM. I knew he had purchased it, which is one of the reasons I asked him. And I know there's a couple others, but again, the $30+ price tag, I think it's almost 40, but in the Canadian currency, I think a 35 is the
Right.
US list price. I think the casual gamer is less likely to pick up this product. It's more of the hardcore, elite, not elitist, but the completists rather,
Sure. Yeah.
which tend to be the DMs anyway. So.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of players at my table who have purchased it. One of them in particular actually brings it with him every week, but he has not been. I mean, as far as I know, unless he's been reading it, and I have no idea, but he has not been using it to like get a leg up or anything like
I know
that.
you
So.
guys were. I know you guys were really worried about that at the start of the season, and I'm glad it's working out. Everything seems to be working out, as far as I know.
Well, we had a little bit of friction because the store hadn't really figured out how they were going to handle the costs of the adventure. There was the original suggestion was ask people to donate $1 a week to help offset the cost of the store.
Right.
And a few people for the first couple of weeks had no, like personally, I got no problem with that. But I mean, some of the people that come out are younger, they're students or they're unemployed or they're kids. Like they don't have money, right? So it's not convenient for them to be coughing up a buck every week. And so the store wasn't really enforcing it that strongly. And then a couple of the people in the group actually voiced some concern. They said, like, well, hey, I don't mind paying the buck, but I don't get the book at the end. So what the hell? Or if the store collects a buck from every person every week, they're going to end up collecting way more money than the cost of the books that they've handed out. Like, again, reasonable concerns, but, in my opinion, it was sort of more of a nickel and diming. It's like, suck it up, pay the buck. So in order to, sort of not ruffle any feathers. I think this season what ended up happening was all the DMs basically bought the adventure. I think most of them bought them online so they could get a discount, hopefully get them ahead of time. So the store never ended up giving them out for free anyway. So there really was no cost to the store this time around, or no out-of-pocket cost. So what we're going to do, and I again as the coordinator, I'm going to notify all the players this week, is next season we're going to charge a buck a week or a one-time flat fee, and we're going to make sure everybody who is a regular understands that before the season begins.
Yeah.
And if they want to come out, that's the way it's going to be. And if they don't like it, they don't have to come out. And I mean, we're fortunate now that we've probably got between 20 and 30 regulars. If two or three people don't come out, it's not the end of the world. A year ago, we were only running with about eight or nine players. And if three or four of them stopped coming, that pretty much would have killed it for us. So. Again, I hate to turn anyone away, and I hate to see someone stop coming simply because it's a matter of $2 or $3. But I mean, you got to draw the line somewhere. If Wizards is charging the store, it stands to reason the store should charge someone.
Yeah, and like I was saying before, our store is not being unreasonable about it either. I was saying before too that they're a pretty busy magic store, as I assume a lot of these hobby shops are. So, they're giving up a lot of ta especially with this huge surge of interest now. They're giving up a lot of table space that would be used for magic players. It like absolutely would be filled with magic players who are buying packs and decks and whatnot at the store. Whereas you have D&D, if in the old way weren't necessarily making that purchase every week, right? So.
Yeah, so and no, our store has been so good that I want to do whatever I can to keep them happy, and they have been so good to me personally. I know, like, I buy a ton of gaming stuff, and they always offer me good prices, competitive prices. Often they'll sort of slip it to me a week early and be like, I still buy it, but it'll be like, here it is. Don't let anybody know you've got it. So
Right.
they've been very generous with us, and you know, for the most part, I think most of the players have been purchasing some items from the store, even if it's just dice or minis. So, you know, I don't think the dollar a week is unreasonable.
But that's cool. Again, and what you can do is you can tally how much you actually make in the season of encounters, maybe do a raffle for a couple modules at the end.
And that's exactly what they said when I spoke with the store coordinator this week to explain what's been going on was, you know, how do you want to handle this? And that's exactly what he said. He's like, you know what? If people are getting bent out of shape for whatever reason, justified or not, you know, let's not ruffle feathers at this point. Let's just proceed and we'll make it very clear that this is how we want to run it next season. And he exactly said that, Mark. He's like, if we collect more money than we need to cover our costs, we'll put it into the we'll use that money to purchase gift certificates or other prizes, and we'll raffle them off at the end to the people who have been here.
Perfect.
And, I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense.
I love that store too. I mean, I walked in there too, and I mean, I'm not a regular by any means, but I walked in there and I was, you could tell there's a sense of, you know what, we're here to game, and that's basically it, and that's great.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, yeah, I mean, they certainly make us all feel valued, even though, you know, we're taking up all the space that could be
used for magic.
Yeah, exactly, right? But at the same time, like you said, they're all gamers too, so.
Excellent.
Yeah.
They're concerned about growing the community, so it all works out in the end.
All right.
And so, just before we jump into this week, so we've said for the last few, like since we started, weeks 1, 2, 3, we've had massive tables. And if this had been 4th edition, it would not have worked. I would have absolutely had to turn people away. You hit a 6 at a 4th edition table, you're done. Like, even with 6, it takes forever.
You'd still be playing.
yeah, we totally would.
Yeah, seriously.
The really upside, there's two really positive things that have been helping. Number one is the D&D Next rules are such that the larger parties are not really having a factor on the time. Like, whether it was a party of 4 or table of 8, it probably would have still taken the same amount of time given the next mechanics. The mechanics themselves have in no way slowed the game down or extended the length of play.
Agreed.
Would you agree with that, Craig?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The other thing is just the way the adventure is set up this season. And there's certainly pros and cons to it, and I personally have my own feelings, good and bad, about it, but certainly on the good side, the fact that the material provided week to week is sort of how do we describe it? It's not railroading the party. Well, that's what I was thinking. Loosey-goosey. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's very much just here's some stuff that's happening, and here are some options for the party, and whether or not the party chooses to do it, and in what way they choose to do it, if they decide that they want to move forward, is absolutely up to them. And the DM can really just let them go with it as much as they feel comfortable with. I was just double checking because I do the actual player podcast where I just put the recorder on and let it run. And I just double checked. I've done 3 sessions and everyone has, the first one was 2 hours and 20. The next was 2 hours and 25. And the one this week was 2 hours and 20. And that's a hell of a lot longer than I want to go. But the organic nature of the session is just, everybody's having a good time. You just run with it. But I mean, I could easily trim those down to 90 minutes if I wanted to. And I don't think that it would have necessarily felt like we missed anything. And so again, because the module is set up in this sort of it's got structure, but you know what I mean? Like with the 4th edition, the way it was set up, it was very much, you do A, you do B, you do C, here's the combat, and it was very rigid and it followed a pattern, which was good because the DMs could come in and they knew done. This one certainly requires more work from the DM, but the fluid nature of the way it's put together is allowing us to incorporate the large parties much more easily.
Well, from what I've read is that it seems that way, that every stage is basically either a different day or a different hour in the day, and it seems that certain things happen in conjunction based on your allegiance and all that stuff. But apart from that, it's, like you said, very loosey-goosey where the players can actually, you know, follow an item that a town crier is calling. They can do whatever the heck they want at any time they want.
Yeah, obviously within reason, but the comments I keep hearing from the experienced players, and this was even a lot last season as well, was it's D&D Encounters is starting to feel more like a home game since we've started using the D&D Next rules, simply because it's given the players more freedom to do more of what they want, like more out of the blue, I want to do something wacky because it sounds cool. And the adventure seems to really allow for that, and the mechanics allow for that.
A little more creative. Great.
Well, it's straddling the line between having like a structured on-rails-y type of adventure and being a sandbox adventure.
Mm-hmm. It's so, doing Yeah, go ahead.
There's structure, but you know, there's a lot more free form, right? So, like, you have Baldur's Gate to run around, and you have a whole bunch of detail on all the various factions, shops, and tons of things. And like I was even saying before, the DM screen that they provide is actually like I've got more use out of that DM screen, I think, in these few sessions.
It is so quality
that I have using the fourth edition screen, because most of the fourth edition stuff that I had, like most of the stuff, I just knew, right? Sometimes I'd need a click to see. I know. Oh, it's pretty sad. I know. But this one, it feels a lot more like. I mean, obviously, it's very situational, because if you're in Baldur's Gate, that's what you're using it for, right? But for this season, it's been super handy that I can pull up a shop name on the fly, kind of thing that fits with the theme that they actually have published in there for the other shops that they're looking in, for example.
All right. So we're a little bit off topic. I mean, we started off by saying, hey, you guys had really big tables this week, and we ended up in like this whole shop talk of the store and everything. So let's get right into it. I think we started last week with Craig. So, Derek, let's hear what your table had to do.
The short version. So
Spaceballs.
Yes. So as we were just saying, the way that this week's session is set up is very loose. It basically, at the beginning, there's an introductory section where it says the players will find out through whatever means the DMs feels is appropriate that the Dukes and the Council and the Parliament have introduced, or rather reintroduced, something called sumptuary laws, which I had to look up because I had no idea what that meant. And the basically what it means is if you're rich, you can wear rich clothes and jewelry and stuff that they assume because you're rich, you can afford and that fits your station in life. If you're a lowly worker and you happen to have a really nice jacket or some really fancy jewelry, no, that stuff is beyond the scope of what someone of your social standing should be wearing. Take it off. That's more or less what it boils down to, is the rich can do whatever they want and the poor people have to look like poor people, even if they've earned enough money to purchase nice looking things.
Even if they're not poor, at least.
Yeah, and it actually says in here that the adventurers are probably going to be picked on as well, because it talks about things like fancy weapons or magic items are certainly going to look like they belong in the hands of someone rich. And
adventurers have no place for that.
Yeah, well, fortunately, because the characters are first level, they don't have any magic items. But
yeah.
But I sort of played that up. I've been really emphasizing to the players every week before this one, you know, you're using pre-generated characters, but think about, do you think your character would be poor, middle class, or rich? And so this week I told them, I'm like, it's going to be important. So in your mind, picture your character. And so as events started to play out, I would ask them. And now that they had given it a couple of weeks thought, the players were very good about saying, I think my character comes from money. He's wearing nice clothes. He looks like he's had a good upbringing. And likewise with some of the other characters. One guy's playing a ranger. He's like, oh, my guy is dirty, dirty, dirty. He doesn't believe in bathing. He doesn't believe in, you know, he looks like a bum. And it's like, okay, but he uses a fancy bow and he bought new arrows. And so, of course, that was easy to pick on. But anyway, the beginning of the adventure is set up where the characters can basically do whatever they want in the city. And they're going to eventually find out about these sumptuary laws, whether it's because a watch patrol has come to them and sort of says, hey, you've got fancy clothes, you know, you're not allowed to have them, or whether it's they overhear or oversee this happening to someone else. And that's how I did it with my groups. The players split up into three smaller groups, and each group at a different area of the city encountered a different group harassing somebody about their clothing or their weapons or their jewelry. And in each situation, it was progressively getting more adversarial, where the first time they saw it, it was just, hey, you know, maybe you're not aware this new law has gone into effect and you need to, you know, remove these garments. And you know, the NPCs were like, oh, thanks for the thing. And then later it was, give me that. You can't wear it. It's against the law. And they were like literally snatching things off of people. And so it gave the players opportunity. I made a point, and the players were very good about it, about separating what they're hearing the other groups doing from what they themselves will be doing and their characters. And the players did a very good job. It was like, even though the third group had now sort of gone through this situation twice before at the table, when it came time for their characters to do it, they did a very good job of oh my God, what's happening? Like playing ignorant, even though the players themselves.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, both your allegiances are with Raven Guard, correct?
Yeah. Well, my table is Craig's
yep,
group.
Yep. Mine still, as well.
Okay. Yeah.
So, with that in mind, like they all sort of, I said to them, I go, essentially it's Sunday. It's a day of rest. People can do whatever they want. It's sort of a leisurely day where people are out. And so they had aligned with the Flaming Fists. I'm like, basically they give you the day off, go do what you want. And so it forced the players to sort of be on their toes and go, oh, well, you're not going to throw us into a fight. What am I going to do? I go, well, what do you think your character would want to do? You got a whole city in front of them. And so, you know, they did little side quests based on their backgrounds and based on the way they envision their characters. And I won't go into all the details here, but, and I made a point of having the story sort of interweave so that the groups were small at the beginning, but then met back up and then split again and then met back up through coincidence. Like the one guy was just like, I look for a pub. And meanwhile, another guy had already said, I go to this specific pub. So I'm like, hey, look, you show up at the same pub. Isn't that a coincidence? And it just worked well to keep more people involved. And, you know, nothing bugs me more than you got a group of eight and one guy goes to do his own secret mission and the other seven sit around twiddling their thumbs going, when are you going to get to my guy? So, no, it worked really well. The one thing I did do, though, was I had a representative from the guild reach out to a couple of the PCs and basically convince them that they needed to come and have a meeting with Nine Fingers to hear about what's really happening behind the scenes. Because when they first got that sort of initial blah, blah, this is what's going on, they're like, yeah, we don't believe you. And so I had sort of had the guild reach out to the party and say like, hey, look, we don't necessarily, although we want you to work for us, we would be just as happy if you just stopped working for the Flaming Fist. And I think by positioning it that way, the party was more receptive. And they're like, oh, why? Well, what's going on? And so I had... all three of the groups that they had split up in had heard about the fact that the dwarven guard at the gate had been robbed and his money had been stolen. And so later in the night when they went and met with the guild was like, hey, did you hear about this guard? And they're like, yeah, what was up with that? And they're like, well, this is what happened. We actually were responsible for that. And this is why. And this is what we did with the money. And this is who ended up benefiting from those wages that he had stolen from people passing through the gate. And I really played up the whole Robin Hood angle, you know, like we may do bad things, but we do them for all the right reasons. And by the end of the night, I had half the party going, we quit the Flaming Fist. We are so done with them. We are joining the guild. So it'll make next week's kind of interesting because, as you had alluded to, the whole thing with the statues and their hands being cut off.
Indeed.
We'll, you know, certainly have the various factions clearly opposing each other.
Did I say that about the statues? I thought I was going to cut that out.
Oh, well,
just kidding. Like,
no, it was good. Like I said, it ran over 2 hours. Everybody, I tried to make sure everybody had a chance to sort of be the star of their own little show. There was a little bit of combat I threw in where some of the NPCs that disagreed with the sumptuary laws basically attacked a group of Flaming Fist guards. And so I had the party sort of help out. It was one of these ones where I was doing all the individual scenes and one of the guys had met this dude and they were having a drink and he's like, let's go cause some crap. And they got in this fight. And then when I went to one of the other scenes, I'm like, from around the corner, this Flaming Fist guard comes and he's like, help, help, we need help. And he sees the party wearing their badges and he's like, you guys, I know you're off duty, but we need help. Our guys are under attack. And then when the third group got involved, I sort of tied all the stories together and then they all realized, oh, we're all going to help this guy in the fight. And so, yeah, it was this... It came together quite nicely, I thought, and they got a little bit of combat in. Nobody, you know, nobody got killed. Everyone got to roll dice, and it was good. I think we had a pretty good session, and based on where things left off with the sort of division of loyalty with our group, we'll see how it works. Especially if we end up breaking down into four groups next week from the three we had the week before, right. I may lose a few of my players. In which case, you know, you may end up with four people that want to join the guild and only two people that want to stay with the Flaming Fists. Or the other way around, in which case it might change the direction of the party's loyalty next week. So we'll see how it plays out. Yeah,
indeed.
Craig, how about your group?
Well, I had a first I had a question for you, but I can't remember anymore. So if I remember it, I'll come back to it.
It wasn't important.
But, hey, it wasn't that important, I guess.
Yeah, you got to just jump right in when I'm on a roll and say, "Yo, apparently. Shut up for a minute. I got a question."
So anyway, basically mine. Played it fairly similarly to yours in that, you know, the group split up, did their own things, you know, throughout the city, because I also had a thing where they had the day off until the evening when they had a special assignment to take care of. But obviously things were played out differently, but I did it much the same way where, you know, we kind of swung back and forth between groups and no one was stuck around twiddling their thumbs around the table. So, but basically I also played up the sumptuary laws, except that none of my players, oh, that's right. That was my question. Did any of your players actually go into the upper city?
Yes.
Okay. So none of my players went into the upper city. So the sumptuary laws, they heard some discussion about the sumptuary laws. They would overhear some of the criers for the Baldur's Mouth giving it some information on the streets, and you know, they didn't really know what it was. A couple of the new players in my group this week, as they were completely new to the season, and everyone was already in the the Fleming Fist. I had decided these two guys were like newer sort of recruits. They've been around for a little bit, but not overly familiar with everything, and they're still learning the ropes kind of thing. So they were assigned to help the party out, because the party had the previous week had decided they're going to go see Ravengard. And it's funny because last week was my center. I think some of the people were questioning what they were doing, and they were really going to, like, you know what, we're going to grill Ravengard, we're going to get to the bottom of this. And they were, some of them were just uncomfortable wearing, you know, the Fleming Fist tabard. So, but it's funny because when they did finally talk to him, I had him have a more of a commanding sort of personality, and they all just kind of accepted what he said. And like, oh, yes, sir. It was pretty funny. But basically, you know, a couple of, like I said, a couple of the guys got talking with some of their guard buddies, because they wanted to, they knew there was a bit of a commotion up at the gate into Upper City. And they went talk to a couple of the Fleming Fist guys who were hanging around and knew. So, you know, they gave them the scoop on what was going on with the sumptuary laws. But I didn't really go too much more into it than that. So I can, you know, it'll, because I mean, they didn't go into the Upper City, so, and they weren't really seeing what exactly was going on, other than there's a lot of people that are upset about it, and yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But the players were really interested in the vandalism that was starting to show up in parts of the lower city.
Let me jump in there for a second.
Yeah.
I actually didn't have time to work that in. I completely forgot about it at first.
Oh, okay. Sure.
And then so I ended up, I opted, instead of doing that, I had the guild approach a party directly. And I think I'm going to work that into sort of the beginning of next week's, where if the party wants to join the guild, they're going to sort of, as an initiation, be like, okay, you're going to help us. We need you to go out and mark some territory for us and vandal. Like, basically, they're going to put the party up to doing that step.
That's pretty good. Yeah, but then I had them investigating the vandals. So through the day, a few of them were really interested in what was going on. Although they weren't technically on duty, they decided to go get a lay on what was happening, and were you know, investigating various pubs and whatnot, were visited. It's funny though, I actually didn't end up having any combat at all in this week's session. We ran for about 2 hours, but we never ended up into any combat situation. However, that's not to say there wasn't any opportunity for that. A lot of the players decided, from some of the NPCs that they spoke with last week, they decided they're going to follow up with those guys on the day off. One of them, I had one of the NPCs named Scraggly Pete, is what he was known as. They had sort of a bad run-in with a guy that they had to intimidate at one point, and one of the PCs kind of felt bad about it. So he went by, he dropped by me and was a little more apologetic, saying, listen, I'm sorry we had to use you like that, but hey, you know, here's 5 gold for your trouble. Blah, 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 blah. So he tried to like mend broken fences around, and they were pretty much trying to gather themselves a bit of a network of spies, or not spies, I shouldn't say that, but like allegiances, I guess, around the city. So just in case they need a favor, maybe later down the road. And one of them is, actually, I shouldn't say anything further, but but it certainly gave me ideas for how things can play out later. But anyway, that's how they spent their day doing things like that. And then in the evening, they had this assignment from Ravengard, which was to ensure that a lot of the working class folk from the outside, is that what's called, Outer City. Okay, so from the outer city, who come into the lower city in the dock areas to work, those people are suspected of some of the vandalism. So Ravengard wants to make sure that, you know, they leave all prim and proper, no issues. And if any of them drop by any of the taverns or whatnot, that once they're done, they're out, no more trouble. Because the suspicion is that these people are the ones coming in, vandalizing the eastern side of the city, which is what I've, I had, like, there's a lot of, like, sort of, like negative comments towards the fist and things like that. But basically, things started to get a little bit out of hand when some of the drunken workers were coming out later on, and some of the other Fleming Fist mercenaries were getting a little impatient as the night ran on, and they had already dealt with a number of these guys. So I had developed that this one group in particular was being really was kind of acting as an agitator to some of these people just trying to make their way home. And I, you know, had a lot of I kept escalating this group throughout the night, but they never turned it into combat. They always they got involved. They you know, they made sure, hey, back off on these guys and the kind of thing, but they never brought it to combat. So it was actually really interesting. I thought for sure there's one particular player in our party who I know that's one of the things he loves with D&D is he loves to have combat. But in this case, he wasn't, he was trying to go for a different way around it. He was going for the diplomatic solution as well. So afterwards, after everything had emptied out, they decided they were kind of interested in this guy who was being a bit of an agitator. And one of the players thought maybe he was involved with some of the vandalism, or he was involved in something because he was such a heckler that they decided to get out of it. Because in my particular group, they're not just wearing badges now; they're wearing full out
Uniforms.
tabards. Like they're like I said before, they're like beat cops kind of thing. And then they can get promoted later, and then they'll just have the badge kind of thing. So they decide, you know, once the job they were satisfied it was completed, a couple of them thought, you know, I'm gonna go and wait to in the tavern where these guys have kind of retreated to afterwards for a drink and wait and see what I can hear and what I see. But we did have a very funny aside, I thought, where one of the players also wanted to come in and be involved, but he decided he didn't want to sit with the other players, so he sat alone. And he's like, "I'm gonna pull up my hood and sit in the shadows, brooding like an NPC that gives out quests to players." So through the night, of course, I had to have an NPC come in, a rugged adventurer, coming in and asking for a quest.
That's awesome.
It was hilarious because I don't think he was expecting it at all. Just so taken aback when I had a. Presented this character that he didn't know how to respond, but I basically turned his response into the adventure sort of thinking it was like a cryptic statement saying, "Okay, so by the syllables you've just used, I counted five. That sounds to me like you want me to go after the friar of the five-pointed staff and blah blah blah." So I kind of built up a quest around it. Then he's like, "Yes, that's what I want."
Nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
So. I don't know. We'll see what happens with that later on, but it was a lot of fun. And like I said, it was pretty much nothing but a role playing session. But I think everyone had quite a bit of fun, and I left things on a little bit of a cliffhanger. There was an argument overheard by one of the players that was scouting along the streets afterwards, looking for vandals, and they had discovered two roguish characters arguing. And he stayed around to watch what was happening. And then one of them pulls a dagger on the other, and he went to break up the argument, and they both ran. He chased after the one that had the dagger, knocked him unconscious, searched his body, and he found a letter with a wax seal, and that's where we cut it.
Very cool.
Indeed.
So, yeah, so we've got we're gonna have some interesting pickup next week, see what happens. Craig, I'm just wondering for your group, how was the class distribution as far as like Dungeons and Dragons classes, like fighters, wizards? Have any particular
Lower
classes
class, middle class.
not represented, or do you have like a lot? I know one week I think we had three barbarians and three druids at the table. Like it just seemed everyone wanted to play the same thing.
I think I actually had a pretty balanced group this week. If I remember correctly, I know I had a couple of monks. I had a barbarian, sorry, I had a cleric, I had a mage. So I had a fairly good representation there at the table. But again, we never really got into any kind of combat situations where it would be more noticeable.
Yeah, no, mine's the same. Like I struggle to remember what everyone was playing, simply because with, you know, with fourth edition, you have one fight, you know right away this guy's the striker, this guy's the defender.
Yeah.
But since the combat's been sort of, I don't want to say half-assed, but it's been very loosey. Like basically, I just let everyone go around and make a couple of attacks, and I just sort of describe, "This is what's happening. You're clearly overwhelming the mob," and it's. You know, it doesn't really matter what you're playing at the end of the day, the result is the same. But no, I think our group is pretty well represented as well. I think we got pretty much one of everything. I think druid was the only one we don't have. The guy who was playing a druid decided to switch to just a cleric, and
Yeah, and I've been trying to like as I was running, I was trying to make a conscious effort to try and foreshadow some things coming in the coming down the line. Obviously, I'm not going to say what they are here, but basically, I've been trying to work some of that stuff in, and also just throwing random sort of little seeds and see where the players take them. So, yeah, it's been really cool to see how they react to certain things.
Well, I'm jealous. Got to get my backside
Yeah.
out there at some point.
Now, and maybe this is not something we should talk about on the podcast, but do you want to talk about the track, like the points that the guys are getting, or do we want to not talk
No.
about that today?
That's kind of
Yeah.
that's for finale thing.
Yeah.
We want to talk about that.
We'll talk amongst each
Agree.
other
We'll talk offline about
about
that
it.
because
Yeah,
I
we'll
have
talk offline
questions.
because I'm actually kind of curious. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that you bring it up,
Yeah.
indeed.
Okay. Well, once again, I want to remind it, you guys, but everybody really, that the Wizards forums, they have a dedicated forum to D&D Encounters, and they have a dedicated sub forum to each season. And the one for this season, there's lots of great resources out there. People are putting together little cheat sheets and other resources that DMs may find useful. So if you're a DM and you're running D&D Encounters and you haven't been on the Wizards forums, you got to go. You absolutely need to go and check it out. And there's a handful of fairly regular contributors, of which I know I'm definitely one of them. And yeah, like there seems to be something new there. I don't want to say every day, but there's a couple of new posts every week for sure. Even if it's just this is how we handled last week's session. So
How would you say
for
the reception to this the current season's format has been compared to previous seasons? Because I don't really use that forum all that much. I've
well.
used it only like recently since I've learned about it.
There was a lot of hate around having to pay for the adventure,
Sure, yeah.
and there was just as much criticism around the things that people felt were missing, specifically maps. But that sort of died down once the adventure actually began. I think
Yeah,
that
fair.
was from people who maybe were looking at it from the outside and weren't actually a part of it. It was like, you know, haters gonna hate. Okay, well, now that you're done hating, why don't you come out and play? Oh, you're not a player, you're not a DM? Well, go away.
Yeah, well, I mean,
But
if you hate it so much, you're probably not going to stick around for much longer, right? So.
yeah, exactly. So no, the people that are playing it are pretty much the hardcore, the regular contributors, and yeah, they've certainly been critical of certain things, like the original thread that went on about what people were upset about. Like everyone who was a regular poster seemed to have something they didn't like about it, justified or not. And but no, now that we're running it, everybody seems to be having a good time, and the forums, the people that contribute to the forums tend to ask questions. Like if they're not sure how something's supposed to work, they go on and they say, hey, we're running this in a few days, what do you guys think? And like four people provide options, and the options people tend to provide are pretty creative. And a lot of the stuff I've used over the last few seasons where I'm not sure or if I want to spice it up, it comes directly from ideas that are coming out of those forums. So if again, if you're a DM and you're not visiting those forums, you got to start.
It's funny because I was, you know, initially when I was reading through the season, I was really looking forward to seeing how other tables played things out and hearing other people's stories. But I haven't actually looked into too much of that yet, because I think I've felt really invested in the story that we've like that our my table's got going right now. So that's certainly an interesting season.
Yeah. So far, so good. I mean, we're only 3 weeks in, so we've got, you know, quite a ways to go, but I think people are starting to get the hang of it. And I know that me as the DM, as I'm reading and rereading the Baldur's Gate handbook,
Campaign
the
guide.
Campaign
guide.
thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
every time I read a new section or I go back and I reread a section that I'm not clear on, it gives me ideas. And I know, like for example, with this week, I had copies of the map of the city for the party, and I was because I had just read certain key sections, I was able to flesh out those details. Like especially when the party went, let's just go wandering around the city. I'm like, well, in that case, I'll send you to the place that I just read about.
Yeah, that's yeah, perfect.
Yeah, and I think that as the weeks progress and I become more comfortable with the environment, I can certainly work more of that in. And to your point, Craig, like once I've got a chance to go back and reread the entire adventure, I can try and foreshadow what's coming or you know certain things that might be coming depending on what the party decides to do.
Go around the corner and
Well,
find a blue police box.
yeah. Nice. You know what I'm actually kind of wondering about is this season's very heavy on the sort of political intrigue sort of aspect and you know that whole mystery as to what's going on, so it's pretty roleplay heavy in that vein. So I wonder, being as it's a 13-week or sorry, 12-week season, and we have another 9 weeks to go, how we're going to feel about that by the end. I mean, certainly things are going to escalate more, but it'll be interesting to see how it continues.
My feeling is that probably not next week, but maybe the week after, or like in the upcoming weeks, I definitely want to do like a big showpiece combat, like basically something in the vein of fourth edition where you've got a big map, everyone's got the minis, you play it out, you count, you literally count the squares as they move, you do it sort of fourth edition style, just to remind players, like, these characters are good at different things, and you can demonstrate a little bit better why certain characters maybe are better at combat or better at other things and not so good at combat. And but no, it definitely is. That's not something I would want to do every week. I mean, if I did, I'd still be playing fourth edition.
Right. And I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a funny thing that you mentioned the players knowing what they're good at and that kind of thing, because I certainly know that our mage in our party, didn't have a whole lot of great spells prepared for this last session. So, and I know he was trying to find ways that he could use his magic, but there's really not much for him to do in that regard this
Yeah, and
week.
we found that too, that some players, some characters are acting in a way, like the players are running these characters very differently on the role-playing side than they would if this was a combat-heavy game. And I think that's just because they don't want to feel left out. Like, just because my guy's a big dumb fighter doesn't mean I have to play him like a big dumb fighter. Whereas if there was lots and lots of combat, he'd be played like a big dumb fighter. So it'll be interesting when combat actually becomes more significant, how people feel their characters either need to change or maybe, how they approach it a little differently. But anyway, let's wait until we actually get to that point, and then we'll talk more about that rather than speculate.
Indeed.
So no further comments.
No,
Nope.
I think we're
Already covered
good.
enough this week. All right, so this concludes stage two, I'm sorry to say, stage two, session three of D&D Encounters, season 15, Murder in Baldur's Gate. Craig, Derek, thanks for joining us again. I'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
See you then. You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit dungeonsmaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20foot and visit 20footradius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D encounters. That's 20foot radius 20ft radius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.